Now, the question of tactics and the character of the revolution is obviously a key to the building of the party. And after Lenin managed to rearm the Bolshevik Party, they then adopted this idea of winning, patiently winning the masses over to their position on the basis of all power to the Soviets, bread, land, and peace. They were in the minority, of course. And there are those who say that, about revolution being bloody and violent and all the rest of it. And if you look at Lenin's writings throughout this period, I'll give some illustrations of it. Firstly, in relation to the April conference, he said, in assessing a given situation, a Marxist must proceed not from what is possible, but what is real. In other words, look what is real in the situation. He must patiently explain. And then he says, this seems to be nothing more, in inverted commas, than propaganda work. But in reality, it is most practical revolutionary work. In other words, the way in which you're going to win the majority, or win the workers, is through patient propaganda work. You don't do it through stunts. You don't do it through adventures. You don't do it by shouting louder than your own throat. You carefully understand the development of the revolution, the concrete questions, and patiently explain through propaganda what needs to be done. In April 11th, he wrote an article, A Shameless Lie of the Capitalists, it was called. It goes on. Pravda, that's the Bolshevik paper, and its followers do not preach violence. On the contrary, they declare most clearly and precisely and definitely that our aim, our main efforts, should now be concentrated on explaining to the proletarian masses their proletarian problems. So they're refuting the suggestion they're in favour of violent revolution. 3 days later, he wrote an article. Blanquism, so Blanqui was a French revolutionary, he thought he could seize power by a minority seizing power, just armed the number, seizing power and taking it. And Lenin says, Blanquism was a striving to seize power with the backing of a minority. With us, it is quite different. We are still a minority and realize the need for winning a majority. So that's the whole basis of the program of the Bolshevik Party, is to win a majority, patiently win a majority. 1 week after that, a resolution was passed, written by Lenin. Party propagandists and speakers must refute the despicable lies of the capitalist papers and the papers supporting the capitalists to the effect that we are holding out the threat of civil war. This is our lie, and we must answer this throughout our own press. This is a despicable lie. Should violence be resorted to, the responsibility will fall on the provisional government and its supporters. Again, showing that how Lenin is posing the question. No, we're for peaceful revolution, but against those ideas, those people who say we're for civil war. We're not for civil war, and we're not against those who say we are for violence. We're not for violence. If violence does occur, it's not our fault, it's the fault of the provisional government. That's why he's posing the question. Again, same day. What can be more absurd and ridiculous than this fairy tale talk about of civil warmongering on our part? When we have declared in the clearest, most formal and unequivocal manner that all our work should be focused on patiently explaining and the like. The proletarian policy, as opposed to the petty bourgeois defensive craze, with its faith in the capitalists. In other words, again, this is what Lenin's saying some months prior to the revolution. This is the whole method, this is the whole essence of Bolshevism in April 1917, according to Lenin. The next day, on the April 22nd, he writes an article. the slogan, because some people say, well, down with the provisional government. Some people shouting, we've had enough of this, it's in April, right? They've only been in power a month. Let's get rid of this government, down with the government. And Lenin says, the slogan, down with the provisional government, is an incorrect one at the present time. Because in the absence of a solid majority of people on the side of the revolutionary proletariat, such a slogan is either an empty phrase or objectively amounts to an attempt at an adventuristic character. That's what he's denouncing. He's saying basically, and the reason, I'll give you the explanation why. If you haven't got a majority of people behind you, then it is false to come forward with the idea of bringing down this provisional government at this particular time. We are in favour of bringing down the government, but only when we win a majority of the population, because we want to replace it. And the reason for that is that it was possible in Petrograd that the workers could have overthrown the government, because they were more revolutionary in Petrograd than in Moscow or other towns in Russia. So maybe in one in the city they could have done it, but they would have been isolated. They would have been basically opened the way for counter-revolution. So you have to be very careful in how things are posed. And that's what Lenin was trying to educate the comrades. In the same article, the slogans of the moment are, one, to explain, underline the proletarian line and the proletarian way of ending the war. Number two, to criticize, underline, the petty bourgeois policy of placing trust in the government of the capitalists and compromising with it. Three, to carry on propaganda and agitation from group to group in every regiment, in every factory, and in particular amongst the most backward workers. Four, to organize, and once more organize the proletariat, every factory, in every district, and every quarter. We wouldn't talk about insurrection and violence. Organize, patiently explain, understand, agitate, criticize, all these things, but not adventurism. The Central Committee already distributed yesterday morning, I just quoted it here, and today published in Pravda a resolution which states clearly that such a moment, any thought of civil war will be shameless and preposterous. That all demonstrations must be peaceful ones, and that the responsibility for violence will fall on the provisional government and its supporters. The banning of armed demonstrations and shooting in the air is entirely correct and must be unconditionally obeyed. Now this is quite dinner. This is a revolution, and Lenin's talking about calm down a bit. There shouldn't be no armed demonstrations. Why? Because we don't want to provoke the counter-revolution. We don't want shooting guns in the air, because that's also going to provoke things. Calm down. So this is the advice he's given. In other words, he's giving advice as a leader, isn't he? He's not saying, forward, let's go for it, forward, don't worry, let's go for it. Doesn't matter the consequences. He's saying, let's see things as they are and learn how we should get the power, how we should be able to carry through the revolution. On April the 24th, 3 days after this, we cannot say that the majority is with us. What we need in the present situation is caution, caution, caution. And again, this is Lenin in April 1917. Again, not exactly as the ultra-left would tend to painting in this years of revolution. Again, down with the provisional government is an adventurous slogan, but the government cannot be overthrown now. That is why we have advanced the slogan for peaceful demonstrations. All we wanted was a peaceful reconnoitering of the enemy's forces. We did not want to give battle, but the Petrograd Committee, that is of the party, turned a trifle to the left, which in this case is certainly a very grave crime. That the Petrograd Party, the leadership in Petrograd, they would turn to the left a bit. at the time of action to go a trifle, quote, more to the left was wrong. We regard this as a very serious crime as disorganization. So Lenin was even scolding his own party, his leaders. Beware, don't fall into this trap of ultra-leftism. You have to be careful of what you do. And we can't move, you'll become ultra-left in this time. You've got to be very cautious. Again, as I quoted earlier, the provisional government must be overthrown, but not now. And not in the usual way. A month later, on the 14th of May, we do not want to seize, we do not want a seizure of power. Because the entire experience of past revolutions teaches us that the only stable power is one that has the backing of the majority of the population. Seizure of power, therefore, would be adventuristic. And our party will not have it. This again, very, very clear, very sharp under these circumstances. 1 month later after that, June the 20th. Only in Russia can power pass to existing institutions, to the Soviets, immediately, peacefully, without any uprising. For the capitalists cannot resist the Soviets of workers, soldiers, peasants, deputies. So there, that's really holding out. The idea of a peaceful revolution in Russia, where the Soviets would take power peacefully. And that was the whole strategy of the Bolshevik Party, right up until July 1917. In June, if my memory serves me, we had the first all-Russian conference of Soviets, of workers and soldiers. And the Bolsheviks decide, because they're a minority in this conference, still a minority, the majority is still the Menshevik, still the social revolutionaries, let's have a demonstration. Let's call a demonstration, a peaceful demonstration, to lobby and put pressure on this conference. And they asked to organize it. And the leaders of the conference, the leaders of the Soviets, started to really create a hullabaloo about this. This is a scandal. They're trying to force our hands. They're trying to, you know, have an insurrection. All these arguments are being sort of put out. And Lenin and the Bolsheviks decided, because they didn't want to play into the hands of these, they decided to call the demonstration off. We'll have no demonstration then. We'll call it off. But they were saying, this is, again, criticizing the leaders for doing this. We will submit to it, but we don't agree with you. The leaders in the Soviets had to think themselves, oh my God, what should we do now then? I'll tell you what, we'll call our own demonstration. That's the way to do it. And that will put the Bolsheviks in their place. So they decided to call their own demonstration 2 days afterwards. And of course, pardon? 18th, I'm glad I've got someone here who can correct the date. 18th of June. And on that demonstration, of course, there's all these placards that appeared, all these banners appeared, saying all power to the Soviets, bread, land and peace, and all the Bolshevik slogans. I think there's only one or two banners that supported the provisional government and so on and so forth. So they were terrified now that the Bolshevik propaganda was gaining an echo amongst the masses. They were agitating, they were going to the factories, they were going to the armed forces to agitate, to explain patiently why we need bread, why we need land, how to get it. It must be all power to the Soviets. And people beginning to listen. Why? Because the provisional government weren't delivering. They were saying, no. We'll put these questions of the land, put it off to the constituent assembly, put it off, jam tomorrow, forget about it. In other words, they were letting down the masses, who were very impatient, who were getting further deprivations would occur in this particular time. Then you had the fall, now of course I can also be, I'm not sure the actual dates, but the first government that was set up, the provisional government, was of bourgeois politicians. I think Kerensky was a member of the government, was a junior minister. Then in June, we have the fall of the government and the resignation, basically, of the key bourgeois ministers, Milyukov, I think it's Guchkov, the other one, the foreign minister, and that led to a government crisis. And the idea then was to bring into the government representatives of the socialist parties to form a coalition government, what you might call a popular front government, which is a user thing, of bourgeois parties and of workers' parties coming together. Of course, Lenin didn't agree, obviously, with this, because it would mean that the workers' parties would become the left cover for the actions and policies of the bourgeois parties. It always happens, always will happen. And therefore they came up with the idea, not bring down the government again, but down with the 10 capitalist ministers. In other words, to gain the ear of the masses, let's have an all-Soviet government. Get rid of these people who are bourgeois elements, because they represent nobody but themselves. And the bosses again, agitated in the factories, agitated in the regiment for this idea. Down, not down with the provisional government, I was out to left, no. But down with the 10 capitalist ministers in the government. Get the capitalists out and get more workers' representatives in there to become an exclusively workers' government, a exclusively Soviet government. And that was how clever now the Bolsheviks are, Lenin in particular, in order to gain the ear of those. In other words, you're not saying get rid of the government, because if you did that, you're getting rid of the Mensheviks and the social revolutionary elements who are in the government. And you don't alienate those people who support them. So to gain a year to the Mensheviks and gain a year to the social revolutionaries, to get them thinking and talking, you say, look, you know, let's have a genuine government of social revolutionaries and Mensheviks, and get rid of the capitalists. They're the ones who can't work. So that's the way they used it. Very skillfully, they were able to, again, win over these individuals. Because this propaganda, these successes were resulting in a ferment in the population as well. I'm just trying to go into all the events that took place in Russia in 1917, but the government was terrified of what was happening in Petrograd, that the soldiers are becoming more and more open to the Bolshevik ideas. So they wanted to do, let's send the soldiers in Petrograd, let's send them to the front, and let's get the other regiments back and to help us out. But let's get the revolutionary workers, get them into the front, get them fighting at the front. And that was the whole strategy of the provincial government. Kerensky became the prime minister, if you like, at that particular moment. And we see, so this classically is a popular front government, the coalition of workers and capitalist government. A bit like in France 1936 or Spain 1936, where the workers' parties go into with the bourgeois parties, popular frontism. And they always use them in order to squeeze them until they serve their particular purpose. We have a turn in the situation in July, early July, in the sense that the workers now becoming impatient. And you also have this kind of thing happening in the revolution. Workers tend to get impatient, the more impatient layers. Let's go for it, let's do something. We've been talked and talked and talked and talked. What, our position is no different. What, you know, we need to go further. So impatient elements develop within the working class. Now the ultra-lefts, see, this is great, because they always base themselves on the impatient workers, right? And they try and push away, divide away the impatient workers from the mass of other workers, which is damaging, which can lead to adventurism, at the point. And not only there, I mean, there's lots of examples where ultra-left, even in trade unions, you know, get people, oh, let's make a different union, break the unions, you know, set up a new revolutionary union, and a new left union, and trying to divide up, or let's create a new Labour Party, you know, let's say, oh, let's sort of non, all it's fused in the same ideas, of trying to split away the more advanced workers from the more inert and more backward workers politically, if you like. I mean, our task is to fuse them together and to take them forward as one. That's the real, that's the Marxist way, that's Lenin's view. That's the experience of 1917, for instance, even there. And nevertheless, what happens is that there's going to be a demonstration in early July, And the workers want to come out with arms. They want an armed demonstration. And Lenin's not in favour of an armed demonstration under these circumstances, because it could lead to an adventure. You know, it could lead to something more than they want to do. It could lead to a premature taking of power, even in Petrograd. And they could take power. The workers have the support, by the way. The bourgeois parties are very limited. So the Bolsheviks actually send out their agitators in order to say, no, don't have a demonstration with arms. Don't do it. This is not the right thing. Which again shows that a leadership of a party has to do things which is not only just popular, but has to do things which can be unpopular under certain circumstances. Where you think it's going to lead to defeat, and it's inappropriate to take a certain action, we should say so. It's like in a strike in a factory. If the bosses are all lined up and prepared, provoking a strike, sometimes it's not always the best thing to go on strike all the time. You have to pick and choose. It's a war, isn't it? It's a battle. In a battle, you just don't go charge, and charge. The general, who had one slogan of charge, is a stupid general. He wrecked the whole army. You've got to retreat sometimes. You've got to maneuver sometimes. You've got to dodge and so on. And so in order to advance to another point. And that's the art of leadership, if you want to know. And that also applies to the class struggle as it does to the of warfare as well. But what he had was, the masses, they weren't prepared to listen. And the advanced workers weren't prepared to listen. They were very impatient and were determined to carry out an armed demonstration. The bourgeois press went ballistic. You know, this is going to be it. Overflow, this is it, there's anarchy, well, all the rest of it. But the Bolsheviks, although they criticised the idea of an armed demonstration, nevertheless, when the demonstration broke out, they went along with those workers. They didn't abandon them. They say, you're wrong, we shouldn't do it, but we'll go with you in any case. To try and curb them a bit, to try and curb them, to prevent any premature action. And of course, this armed demonstration shook the whole of Russian society, frightened the bourgeois, frightened the imperialists, frightened the allied imperialists and so on. And, just shocked the whole establishment. And therefore, and the shock above all, Kerensky. And we have a turn again in the situation where the bourgeoisie see this as an opportunity to strike back at Bolshevism, which is very seen as a very everybody's a Bolshevik now. Anybody who's read, who's every Bolshevism here, Bolshevism there, everywhere's a Bolshevik. If you raise demands in the interests of people or land seizures or anything else, you're Bolsheviks. And therefore, you had people who weren't Bolsheviks who became Bolsheviks because they were. If they're Bolsheviks, and I'm called a Bolshevik, and they would be a Bolshevik. And that was the kind of idea, and it was this guy to spread. But it was a hue and cry. It was like a huge propaganda war was waged against the Bolshevik Party. Joined in by the Kerensky, the provisional government, the bourgeoisie, the press, everything was mobilized now to demonize the Bolshevik Party and to say it was just trying to take power by conspiracy and civil war and so on. And they ordered the arrest of Lenin and the Bolshevik leaders. The counter-revolutionary mobs and the Black Hundreds were encouraged to go onto the streets. They broke up the Bolshevik presses, they took over their headquarters, they smashed everything up, and basically drove the party underground. Lenin had to escape to Finland. He had to get out of the country as quickly as possible. Others had been arrested. Trotsky was arrested and imprisoned, and the whole thing was a frenzy. Trotsky decided like a Niagara of lies flooded down onto the Bolshevik Party. They were German agents. They were in favour of bloody civil war. Everything was just thrown against them. And they were Lenin was charged with treason. He was charged with treason. So he had to go into hiding. So this was a new feature. This is a counter-revolution within the revolution, isn't it? Very dark situation. And required a certain reassessment of the situation, what should happen. Lenin then begins to wonder, assess the situation, and came forward with the idea, look, the leaders of the Soviets are persecuting us. The leaders of charging us with treason. They're outlawing us. They're in league with the counter-revolution. How can the Soviets now be a vehicle for socialist revolution? With these people, it's impossible, he says. It's impossible. They are all now in league with the counter-revolution. And raised the idea of withdrawing that slogan, all power to the Soviets, and it now became the opposite. These people were, how do they have power in these hands, in the people of these hands, when they were carrying out such counter-revolutionary activities. Withdrawing that and raising the idea of power to the factory committees. He raised this, the possibility, in the committees in the factories. And thus they could be the ones that could organize the embryo of a workers' government. But not the Soviets, because the Soviets now were actually supporting the counter-revolution. So that was the position that Lenin came from. So now we have to abrupt change our policy here, and our agitation must follow suit. Which again, they implemented. Right then, here's who I am. So we are coming to the end, nearly. I'll just give you the full package as opposed to the abridged version. Now the biggest change in the situation after this the July days is a resignation from the government of the bourgeois ministers and the formation of the government of social revolutionaries and Mensheviks, but carrying out the same program, bourgeois program, as before. They intensify an offensive on the front. They are desperate to have a victory at the front against the German, advancing German troops, because that will boost their position, I think. You know, give us a victory, for God's sake, give us a victory. That will solve all our problems. Of course, they didn't get a victory. This hullabaloo about the offensive and all the rest of it just fell to pieces. And all this demagogy they had fell to pieces. And now, very interestingly, of course, you have the development, the end of July, beginning of August, real counter-revolution beginning to raise its head within the armed forces, within the military in particular. Rather than mess about with Kornel, with Kerensky and so on, let's go for a real government of order. And that is we got a military conspiracy breaking out in the armed forces. And this led to the development of the Kornilov insurrection. General Kornilov, who was praised by the provisional government, a wonderful general and all the rest of it. Of course, he then began to organize a counter-revolution and organizes the backward sections of troops and so on to march on Petrograd to overthrow the provisional government once and for all, smash the Bolshevism, bring the monarchy back to power. That was his idea then, and have a real war and bring stability, etc., etc., back to Russia. Of course, the question of I'm just looking at some other notes I've got here. Right. The question of the counter-revolution was always in the air. Conspiracies, counter-revolution, always in the air, felt that root of 1917. But now it took on flesh. And actually, in a revolution, you either carry to the revolution to a conclusion, or, if you don't, you'll prepare the ground inevitably for a counter-revolutionary attempt. That also happens in revolutions. We've seen that in Venezuela. That's the reason for it, that if you don't complete the revolution, which the social revolutionaries and the Mensheviks were prepared to do, then it means that the counter-revolution, the real counter-revolution, will attempt to take power at a certain point. And what you have at the end of August, the attempt by Kornilov to march on Petrograd and to smash the capital. And the biggest problem, of course, with Kornilov is that you have to prepare a counter-revolution. In the same way you have to prepare a revolution, you've got to prepare a counter-revolution. It does not happen just by, announcing it. And you have to do it at a certain time. Time is important as well for revolution as in counter-revolution. And basically, he botched the job. Right? He made a mess of it in reality. Didn't prepare the ground properly for the advancing troops and so on and so on, or the counter-revolutionary troops. And as soon as the counter-revolution was known about, soldiers and workers went to see Trotsky in prison. What should we do? Should we use this as an opportunity to overthrow Kerensky? Or should we deal with Kornilov? And Trotsky's position was, deal with Kornilov. He's the first enemy. Deal with Kornilov, and we'll deal with Kerensky afterwards. And we must mobilize the workers to crush the counter-revolution. So detachments of Bolsheviks and the armies and so on were sent to fraternize with the troops, the counter-revolutionary troops, to fraternize with them. And they won them over. So all these trains are stopping, the railway workers have stopped the railways running and so on. So all the troops were outside of Petrograd, and they were being surrounded by revolutionary agitators, explaining to them what they were doing, what they should be doing, what Kornilov was doing, etc. And they won them over. So the whole counter-revolution disappeared overnight, completely disappeared. But it gave the opportunity of the Bolsheviks to fraternize with the troops, fraternize with the workers, fraternize with those people who also had sympathies with the provisional government and sympathies with Kerensky and the social revolution, and they won their confidence over. That was the big thing. So the coup collapsed. They had to release Trotsky from prison, by the way, and the Bolsheviks became legalized again because of the situation. And very quickly, by the early September, they begin to win big players over. And they won a majority now of the Soviet in Petrograd, and a majority of the Soviet in Moscow came over to the Bolsheviks. This is an amazing turnaround. In other words, the masses, after that patient work and experience, isn't it? The experience of the big events and patient explanation delivered the masses over towards the Bolsheviks. And that gave rise then to the big development of the revolution in 1917. But still, even then, whereas the Bolsheviks had certain support in certain Soviets in Petrograd, Moscow and others, they didn't really guarantee it out of everywhere. And they still offered a united front, because that's what you're talking about. By the way, the defeat of Kerensky was due to a united front policy being pursued by the Bolsheviks. What do we mean by united front? The united front is where workers' organizations come together for certain common aims, practical common aims. They don't dissolve themselves. They join up, as their own organizations, but they fight together for a common purpose, that is to smash Kerensky. That's exactly what they did in relation to that event. I think I did have a quotation here, but I think it is. Quite interesting to see what Lenin had to say. May as well get the gist. This is what Lenin said about fighting Kornilov. We shall fight. We are fighting against Kornilov, just as Kerensky's troops do. But we do not support Kerensky. On the contrary, we expose his weakness. That is the difference. It is rather a subtle difference, but it is highly essential and must not be forgotten. In other words, we fight along shoulder, yes, with Kerensky's troops and supporters against Kornilov, but we don't give Kerensky any support, political support. On the contrary, we explain his weaknesses to the people we are around. What then constitutes our change of tactics after the Kornilov revolt? We are changing the form of our struggle against Kerensky. This is an interesting point. We change the form of the struggle. Without in the least relaxing our hostility towards him, without taking back a single word said against him, without renouncing the task of overthrowing him, we say that we must take into account the present situation. We shall not overthrow Kerensky right now. We shall approach the task of fighting against him in a different way. Namely, we shall point out to the people who are fighting against Kornilov Kerensky's weaknesses and vacillations. That has been done in the past as well. Now, however, it has become the all-important thing, and this constitutes the change. In other words, we fight Kerensky by exposing his weaknesses to those who support him in the common struggle to stop Kornilov. The intensification of our campaign for some kind of partial demands to be presented Kerensky. In other words, this is what the demands they put on Kerensky. Arrest Milyukov, arrest the bourgeois. Arm the Petrograd workers. Summon Kronstadt, Vyborg, and Helsingfors troops to Petrograd. Dissolve the Duma. Arrest Grodzianko. Legalize the transfer of the landed estates to the peasants. Introduce workers' control over grain and factories, etc., etc. We must present Kerensky as to the workers, soldiers and peasants, we must present these demands not only to Kerensky, and not so much to Kerensky, but to the workers, soldiers, peasants who are being carried away by the course of the struggle against Kornilov. We must keep up their enthusiasm, encourage them to deal with the generals and the officers who have declared for Kornilov. Urge them to demand the immediate transfer of land to the peasants. Suggest to them that it is necessary to arrest these other people, Milyukov and so on. Dissolve the Duma, close down Reich and other bourgeois papers, and instigate investigations against them. In other words, although we're putting demands, basically, it's for the masses we're looking for. In other words, link to the masses, link to the advanced workers. Explain to them what's going on. And that way we can win them to our fight. At the moment, we must campaign not so much directly against Kornilov, directly against Kerensky, not directly against him, as indirectly against him. This is very, how subtle can you be? Namely, by demanding more and more active, truly revolutionary war against Kornilov. In other words, we place demands on the labor leaders. There's plenty of ways to skin in a cat. You don't have to denounce, poor cat, you don't have to denounce, Kerensky directly. You can undermine him by exposing his weaknesses. Just like with the labor leaders. You don't have to be, traitor, all this what you get from the ultra left. No, you can undermine them by explaining why they are deficient, why their demands are deficient, what their weaknesses are, what they should be doing, then positively taking up a criticism in a friendly way of the labor leaders. That's the whole point. He's even doing this to Mr. Kerensky, building the struggle against Kornilov. Says a lot for the Bolshevik program, surely. It seems to me, says Lenin, that this should be passed on in a letter, not in the papers, to our propagandists, to the agitators, propagandists, and to the party members in general. We must relentlessly fight against phrases about defense of the country, about a united front of revolutionary Democrats, about supporting the provisional government, etc., etc. Since they are simply empty phrases, we must say, now is the time for action. You social revolutionaries and Menshevik gentlemen have long since worn these phrases threadbare. Now is the time for action. The war against Kornilov must be conducted as a revolutionary war. In other words, don't just talk about it, do it. Translate the words into deeds. This is the way you're talking about it. And talking to the masses, that's what you're doing. You should be doing things, not just talking about it. The leaders talk, we must do. This is the relationship that the Bolsheviks are building up with the workers themselves. Of course, it's interesting to note, by September the 1st, Lenin swaps back. He changes again. He adopts the slogan of all power to the Soviets, which he had abandoned in July. Now he sees the possibility of the situation changing here because of the Kornilov events. And he writes an article in September, early September, on compromises. Quite an interesting piece, just want to read it to you. The term compromise in politics implies the surrender of certain demands. the renunciation of part of one's demands by agreement with another party. The usual idea the man in the street has about the Bolsheviks, an idea encouraged by the press, which slanders them, is that the Bolsheviks will never agree to a compromise with anybody. The idea is flattering to us, says Lenin, as the revolutionary party of the proletariat. But it proves that even our enemies are compelled to admit our loyalty to the fundamental principles of socialism and revolution. Nevertheless, we must say that this idea is wrong. Engels was right when, in his criticism of the Manifesto of the Blanquist Communists in 1873, he ridiculed their declaration, "No compromises," was their slogan. This, he said, was an empty phrase, for compromises are often unavoidably forced upon a fighting party by circumstances. And it is absurd to renounce once and for all, to accept payment on account. The task of a truly representative revolutionary party is not to declare that it is impossible to renounce all compromises, but to be able, through all compromises, when they are unavoidable, to remain true to its principles, to its class, to its revolutionary purpose, to its task of paving the way for revolution and educating the mass of people for the victory of the revolution. He gives an example. To agree, for instance, to participate in the third and fourth Dumas was a compromise. That is, these parliaments in Russia, which were pretty undemocratic things, they participated in them. That was a compromise, he said. We wanted a revolution. So we had to compromise. Why? Because the conditions of revolution weren't there. So you compromise. Now, just to explain. But this was a compromise. Absolutely forced upon it. For the balance of forces made it impossible for us, for the time being, to conduct a mass revolutionary struggle, and in order to prepare this struggle over a long period of time, we had to be able to work even from inside such a pigsty, says Lenin. In other words, if you can't call immediately the masses to revolution, you have to make a compromise. But he used the compromise in order to prepare the ground for the future revolutionary movement of the masses. So it is being clever in using what avenues are there in order to further the revolution in those concrete conditions. History has proved that this approach to the question by the Bolshevik Party was perfectly correct. Now the question is not of a forced, but a voluntary compromise. Isn't this not a forced compromise? But now you can have voluntary compromises. The Russian Revolution is experiencing so abrupt and original a turn that we, as a party, may offer a voluntary compromise. True, not to our direct and main class enemy, the bourgeoisie, but to our nearest adversaries, the ruling petty bourgeois democratic parties, the Social Revolutionaries and the Mensheviks. He's talking about a compromise, and we'll give them a compromise. We'll make them an offer. We'll make them a compromise offer. We may offer a compromise to these parties. I think we should do so, says Lenin. That was written in early September 1917. The compromise on our part is our return to the pre-July demand of all power to the Soviets and a government of the SRs and Mensheviks responsible to the Soviets. We'll go back to that position. All power to the Soviets, and therefore all power to the Mensheviks and the Social Revolutionaries. We'll go back to that position. Now, and only now, perhaps during the only a few days or a week or two, such a government could be set up and consolidated in a perfectly peaceful way. This is Lenin. Not talking about violent revolution. Peacefully doing it. This is in September 1917. In all probability, it could secure a peaceful advance of the whole Russian Revolution and provide exceptionally good circumstances, good chances, for great strides in the world movement towards peace and the victory of socialism. in my opinion, the Bolsheviks, who are partisans of the world revolution and the world revolutionary methods, may and should consent to this compromise. For the sake of the revolution's peaceful development. So he's saying, you know, we'll make this compromise only to ensure the peaceful development of the revolution. Again, this is September 1917. An opportunity that is extremely rare in history and extremely valuable. An opportunity that only occurs once in a while. We're making this compromise. We're making this offer. But they've got to carry through this revolution in a peaceful way. And he goes on. The Mensheviks and social revolutionaries would agree to form a government wholly and exclusively responsible to the Soviets. So there's not the bourgeoisie. You form a government and you're going to be responsible for what the Soviets say. The Soviets tell you to do a program, you carry out that program. That's all we're saying. Brush the bourgeoisie away and take the power. That's no problem. That's what Lenin's saying. I think the Bolsheviks would advance no other conditions, trusting that the revolution would proceed peacefully, and party strife inside the Soviets would be peacefully overcome thanks to really complete freedom of propaganda and to the immediate establishment of a new democracy in the composition of the Soviets, new elections and their function. In other words, if we have a disagreement, we'll fight them out within the Soviet itself through argument, discussion and voting. What more than you want, that's the deal we're making. You take power and the Soviets will discuss internally who should get the majority on the basis of argument and voting. And that's the position of the Bolsheviks in September 1917. No insurrection, nothing like that. Offer them a deal, let's do it. I'm putting the demand on those leaders because they are talking to the masses. They're talking to the workers, they're talking to the soldiers, they're talking to the peasants. This is the way forward. And winning the support of the peasants, that's a great idea. And winning them to their ideas. But the leadership are refusing, because the SRs and the Mensheviks are terrified, they don't want to do that. So this is what they're offering, a peaceful revolution in September 1917 itself. We'll jump a bit now, I think, because otherwise you're going to be here all night. See other quotes as well. Round it all up. You're talking about the Bolsheviks now winning the majority in the Soviets in September, in Moscow and in Petrograd. This shows they're also having elections in the local Duma. Local elections are taking place all up throughout Russia. They're gaining big majorities. The Bolshevik Party is standing not only in the Soviets, they're standing in the bourgeois Duma elections, the local elections. And the support for the social revolutionaries and the Mensheviks are going down. The support for the bourgeois parties are going down. And the support for the Bolsheviks is shooting up. Which gives Lenin now is beginning to kind of stick. Christ, we are gaining the majority of the workers, yeah? We're gaining the majority throughout the country, yeah? We have to start thinking about moving on a bit now. We've given this compromise to the compromisers, and if they don't deal with it, then we have no alternative to start making preparations ourselves as the majority to take the power from the Soviets. That's the idea coming to Lenin's head. And you can see that in October. We're talking about the months of the insurrection taking place here. In October, on the 9th, the proletariat will stop before no sacrifices to save the revolution, which is impossible without the program set forth above. On the one hand, the proletariat would support the Soviets in every way if they were to make use of their last chance of securing a peaceful development of the revolution. You're talking about, 3 weeks before the revolution taking place? And Lenin's still talking, we need the peaceful revolution. Take the power, for God's sake. And they're all quivering in their boots. The same article in October, having seized power, the Soviets could still at present, and this is probably their last chance, secure a peaceful development of the revolution. Peaceful elections of the deputies by the people, a peaceful struggle of the parties inside the Soviets, a testing of programs of various parties in practice, a peaceful passing of power from one party to another. That's 3 weeks before the revolution. He's telling you this is what can be done, a peaceful change in society, but on precondition that you take the power at the top. But they're not prepared to do it. I won't go in, I'll go for it anymore. I'll just go across from Trotsky. I haven't quoted Trotsky, I think I should quote Trotsky, in his Great History of the Russian Revolution, which sums up the entire experience, really. The transfer of power to the Soviets meant, in its immediate sense, a transfer of power to the compromisers, to the social revolutionists, the Mensheviks. That might have been accomplished peacefully, by way of simple dismissal of the bourgeois government, which had survived only on the goodwill of the compromisers and the relics of the confidence in them in the masses. The dictatorship of the workers and soldiers as it had been in effect ever since the 27th of February, that's the Trotsky thing. The dictatorship really existed, but the workers didn't have the power, they didn't realize it. But the workers and soldiers were not, to the point necessary, aware of it, of the fact. They had confided the power to the compromisers, who in turn had passed it over to the bourgeoisie. The calculations of the Bolsheviks on a peaceful development of the revolution rested not on the hope of the bourgeoisie would voluntarily turn over the power to the workers and soldiers, but that the workers and soldiers would in good season prevent the compromisers from surrendering power to the bourgeoisie. So it's forcing the social revolutions and the Mensheviks to take this power. The concentration of power in the Soviets and the regime of Soviet democracy would have opened before the Bolsheviks a complete opportunity to become a majority in the Soviet and consequently to create a government on the basis of their program. For this end, an armed insurrection would have been unnecessary. The interchange of power between parties could have been accomplished peacefully. All the efforts of the party, for the Bolshevik party, from April to July had been directed towards making possible a peaceful development of the revolution through the Soviet. Patiently explained, that had been the key of the Bolshevik policy. And that sums it all up, the experience. That this whole strategy of the Bolsheviks and their tactics they employed to win a majority was to demand of the Soviet leaders that they take the power. They brush away the bourgeois, they carry out the revolution. They're the majority to do it. And if they did that, then they could guarantee a successful development inside the debates, inside the Soviet itself. Who's going to be the government? The Bolsheviks, the social revolutions, the Mensheviks? That would be decided by votes inside the Soviet itself. But if you don't take the power and allow the bourgeoisie to keep the power, then we have no alternative. As we now believe we are the majority, and if we Lenin's right then, in the 3 weeks from the 10th of October, we must now prepare an insurrection. There's no alternative. We're left with no alternative. These parties will never do it. They're content with the bourgeois keeping the power. They're not prepared to give the Soviets power. And we must, as the leaders, as the majority within the Soviets, carry out that particular initiative. And that's what happened. I don't agree with all the details. The Military Revolution Committee was established in the armed forces. Trotsky was put in charge of the operations. Basically, it's like a squeezing a flea, you know. The operations, as Cannon put it, the struggle in Petrograd was very peaceful. The insurrection was very peaceful. It was like a little scuffle, you know, on a Saturday night, a little scuffle. That was it. In Moscow, it lasted a week. It was a bit more violent, a bit more upheaval in there. Even that wasn't very much. The bloodshed came after the revolution, when the Mensheviks and social revolutionists, the social revolution split, by the way. The left social revolutionaries and right social revolutionaries. And the left social revolutionaries sided with the Bolsheviks. The first government formed after the revolution was a coalition government of Bolsheviks and left social revolutionaries. Lenin comes to the Congress of the Soviets on the 25th of October in the old calendar, the 7th of November in the new calendar, the Western calendar, and appeals and says, we are now forming a Soviet government. and the son carries the whole a number of measures, resolutions apart for the ending of the war, just peace, land of the peasants, all the demands that were put forward are now put into fruition. But that's the point in where the Menshevik go to counter-revolution. The social revolutionaries go at the side of counter-revolution. The imperialists start to intervene. 21 foreign armies invaded Russia to overthrow the Bolsheviks. And that started the bloody civil war. And with that, you know, millions perished in defending the workers' state and the defending the Soviet government at that particular time. It does show how great these events are, what lessons there are to be had to prepare ourselves for the future. And it's above all, the reason why I've quoted at length is I think you have to name the method and name what to say. Don't take my word for it, as it were. Read Trotsky, read Lenin, read the participants in the revolution, because that's where the real lessons are to prepare ourselves for the future successful revolutions internationally in the coming period.
One of the most exciting lead-ups that we've had.